When it comes to weight management, we tend to focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. That's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up today.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 527, coming at you early on a Wednesday, at least early on my side of the world, but it seems like it's been a long day already, because there's been just ridiculous stuff going on as a Giants fan, and we'll get to that shortly. You can find me on Twitter, at BDentric, and I am joined by a special guest, a friend of the show, been on many times now, bullpen guru, expert, however you want to say it, for rotowire.com, really good poker player, but more importantly, really good fantasy player, really good guy. And he's an avid golfer too, when he can, where his in the Midwest, when the seasons allow. You can find him on Twitter at Ryan Roof, R-U-F-E. Ryan, how we doing, my friend?
Doing great. Thanks for having me. Yeah, no golf recently. I was trying to get out in December, but it's going to be, or we have a winter storm warning just issued here in the Midwest. I think it's going to affect some holiday travel. We have family coming in from Michigan tomorrow, which is they're coming in early to try to beat that storm, and I think Browns host the Saints on Saturday. Wow. And it's going to be like negative degrees, so nice. Kind of bracing for the incoming weather, but hopefully it'll be a white Christmas here in Cleveland. I'm not sure if you've ever had a white Christmas or not, but
only time I have is my ex-in-laws. They live up in Reno, and they have a place in Incline Village over by North Shore Tahoe. One Christmas morning, we woke up and the place was just covered in snow. So that was very cool. But I don't get it perennially like you guys do, or at least every so often like you guys do. But yeah, it's cool. I like the white Christmas part. I don't know how you guys live their full season. I just can't do it. That's too much for my West Coast butt.
Yeah, a couple of years, I think past couple of years, we haven't had a white Christmas, but I think we're supposed to get like 6 inches of snow. So,
oh wow.
So that'll make it at least fun. A little more appropriate for the holiday. But definitely. Happy to join you today and talk some fantasy baseball.
Yep, looking forward to it as always. Before we get into the fun of the recent news and the bullpens of the world, plug away what you got going on at RotoWire and everything else you got going on.
Yeah, this was a heavy month of doing outlooks, player outlooks for RotoWire.com. On each player page, you'll see an outlook for the season, you know, kind of at the top of the page. So really focused just on relievers, done about 130 outlooks for relievers thus far. So it's been fun to do that. So it really kind of helps me formulate my opinions on certain relievers, specs for saves, who's next in line for saves, and a lot of that we'll talk about today. So it's pretty exciting. Also going to be working on my initial closer rankings for 2023. I was going to try to get that up before the new year, but not sure that's going to happen. But if not, I'll get that up early in January. And I'll try to do forecasted saves. I'll look at, what the projections say in terms of forecasted saves, things like that. It's been a busy month, doing just fantasy baseball research, getting into a bunch of drafts. I'm doing done about a handful of Gladiators on the NFBC platform, about a handful of NFBC 50s, handful of DCs. Got a good feel for the player pool and the market and where I you know, want to target certain players, especially relievers. So, been pretty interesting. Like I've been like last year I was like all early closers, and this year, like I still kind of want to get one early guy, but I've been more so waiting, taking more specs later. So it's been kind of an interesting shift, for me. And I don't know if it's just because this point of the off season, we have a lot more clarity than we did last year with the lockout and stuff. But, yeah, I've been before Kenley Jansen signed, I had a lot of Kenley Jansen.
Yeah. Nice.
So yeah. He was kind of like the first closer, like I was comfortable with, like in the bottom tier of the top guys. So, it's been a fun off season thus far.
Yeah, it definitely has been. And that's always, well, usually been my philosophy is give me one good closer, solid closer, and I'll kind of build the rest. Last year was definitely different. I think you made a great point is, you know, I said it, I think, a few episodes ago with Ryan or something. The first big signing last year wasn't until like February with Machado. We're almost done with all the big signings. Like literally, I think MLB like tweeted out the top guys at every position. You're like, yeah, they're good. But are these really impactful players for what we do? Probably not. Like at least not early on in drafts. So yeah, there's a lot
waiting for
more.
That Jurickson Profar signing. You know,
hey, don't worry. We'll segue right into this with the Giants just completely screwing up the entire offseason, missing out on Judge and Correa and everything else, and in doing so missed out on Swanson and others. I now look at that tweet from MLB.com and go, wow, so we have all of this money to spend. Just give me the whole sheet, apparently. We can pay for all of them and see what mess. So we might get Profar, we might get Gene Segura, we might get all these guys that can hit 10 home runs and see what happens. So, yeah, what was your thoughts? Because I could go on an entire show by myself. I could be like Mad Dog Unleashed here in a minute. So we'll leave that one to him. What's your thoughts on what took place there? Because I've heard actually some interesting takes of late on MLB Network that the Giants at the same time screw this whole thing up with Correa. Like, how do you do this deal and then miss out on all this other stuff? But at the same time, they said they need to look into this deeper, because how does it go from a press conference on Tuesday to less than 24 hours, a 12-year, $350 million deal with those specifics are done already? Something sounds a little bit behind the scenes was going on. Like Correa was almost on his way out. Like, I don't know. There's some interesting things going on there. What's your thoughts on this Correa deal? Because obviously for fantasy, he's going to play third base. It depends on who you believe on Twitter. It's going to be a big move. I believe Mike Kurland. But we'll see where things go there. So how do you see all this?
Well, at first I didn't believe it because it was John Heyman whose tweet I saw first, and then he, you know, broke that Judge to San Francisco news, and then that didn't happen. So then I saw Jeff Passan tweet it, and I was like, oh, okay, so this is probably real. Mm-hmm. It's wacky, man. I don't know the specifics of what they noticed, you know, within the physical or the medicals or whatever. I don't know if you have any details on that, but it's just really, really strange. I mean, it kind of reminds me, like, I think I said this a couple podcasts ago, kind of reminds me of like the Deshaun Watson thing where, he was like, no, Browns are out. And then all of a sudden he signs with the Browns. It's just so weird. So there's a lot of craziness happening.
A lot of craziness. And the good thing is, like, I was listening to Susan Slusser, who's one of the best beat reporters in the Bay Area. She's been with the Giants and the A's, and she's just phenomenal what she does. And she was on vacation, but they had her on MLB Network, and she's in London on vacation. And this is what's going on because of this Korean news. Like, completely just take, you get your kids in the background. I'm laughing, going, wow, this is what this Korean news is. Like, I thought I had it bad. She's probably furious right now. But one thing she seriously said, and it made so much sense, was, the Giants front office has to answer questions now because they can't just like sit back and go, oops. So, and she said, one of the most important questions is going to be, was this a serious, like, cause the report said it was medical. So now, like, we need to know what was it like. Is it worth losing him because he was going to be out for half of the first season of a 13-year deal? Or what is it? Are we just saying medical to save our butt because he's leaving to go to the Mets? Cause like scorn lovers. She's basically like, we need answers. Like, not just reporters, Giants fans, because this is not a good look at all. This is a bad situation. So
I'm curious. Have to wonder too if it's like partly player driven. Like, what if Gray was just like told the Giants, like, you know what? I don't know, man. I'm having second thoughts.
100%.
And then they just kind of like made that up about his medicals or something.
That's why she said we need answers, because I think it could definitely be that too. I think it could be that for the fact that that deal was done so quickly with the Mets. Like, we know the Mets will just throw money around, but to put a 12-year deal together still takes a little bit of time to get the specifics figured out, and to do it with less than 24 hours when a conference just magically gets canceled because of medicals. That seems a little on the fishier side of things. So I'm 100% with you too. I think it could be easily Craig going, you know what? You know, my buddy Lindor and these guys called me up, and this looks like a lot better fit over here. Let's get out of here. Like, I don't need to be in San Francisco. So
I've been on the phone with Lindor, like, after he signed with the Giants, and Lindor was like, ah, man, what the hell? You know?
Yeah, exactly. I had this deal lined up for you, man. It's so cool over here. Like, so I could 100% believe that too. Like, that is definitely on the table. So I'd love answers. Don't know if we'll ever get the right answers, but I would like something besides just like, oops, we screwed up. Let's move on. Give me something here, because there's a lot
of Crawford season, baby.
Yeah, he's back. He's back. They're going to have him play third base, which I was skeptical of. Well, now he's back at short. More importantly, what I love to see, and I've been preaching him up on recent, even last night's show with Toby, I'm a Thyro Estrada fan, and he was already locked into second base. Now he's really locked in, because now you don't have to worry about Flores floating around. He can go play third or something. Like, it really secures that middle infield, at least before injuries or whatnot. And it does lock that in, at least for now, until they go and sign Gene Segura or something. Like, why couldn't they get Brandon Drury for 2 years, $17 million? I'd love that move. Like, you see, this is why you can't get me started on this. Let's talk about some other hot stove stuff. We're just going to kind of spitball some things here. Just going to get Ryan's takes on this. What was your favorite hot stove move for fantasy purposes? Like, which one when you saw it, like, excellent, this is the one right here.
Probably Aaron Judge, Anthony Rizzo back to the Yankees. You know, we know what they can do in that stadium, you know, with that lineup. I just think it, you know, going to a new team, you kind of almost have to, like, you know, knock the player a little bit, you know, new team, new contract, pressure, new fans, you know, new teammates, blah, 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 all this stuff. So I think them going back to the Yankees, I think it just kind of makes me more comfortable drafting them. And especially Rizzo with the, you know, the short porch and right. And, you know, Judge's captain now over in New York. So, I think that was probably my favorite move, at least for fantasy purposes, because I did get a lot of early Judge and Rizzo, like in my early drafts. So seeing them go back to the Yankees is makes me feel a little bit more confident in those picks.
I like the Rizzo one for sure, because I was kind of hesitant at first, and when he lands there, it's like I've been telling myself I need to start taking him a little more seriously, not just kind of putting him off where he's getting or his ADP is right now. There's definitely more appeal than there was before now that he's back in the Bronx. I'm 100% with you on that. Now, on the flip side of things, you know, some guys just take money and they don't care about our fantasy dreams. So what move was, like, for you the worst for fantasy purposes, potentially?
It's kind of a little weird question for me, because this has more to do with, like, who I've been targeting already in drafts and how it affects them. So for me, it's Correa going to the Mets. I've been kind of targeting third base a little bit later than others, just because there's a few guys I like really late. Like, Justin Turner is just going way too late. And now that he's has a contract, I think he'll with Boston, I think he'll start moving up a little bit. But Yandy Diaz was another guy I was really comfortable drafting late. And a couple others were Eduardo Escobar, Brett Beatty. I just like taking shots on those guys as, you know, my third baseman. So Correa going to the Mets, probably going to play third, certainly impacts their, you know, plate appearances and playing time. So that's kind of a bummer from that perspective. But I think it also kind of gives Starling Marte a little bit of a hit. Correa hit second all last year. I think probably continue to hit second in front of Lindor with the Mets. So, and maybe they keep Marte there. I'm not sure, but you know, you're investing long term in Correa. I'm thinking he's probably going to hit wherever he wants. So you know, that gives a little knock to Marte in terms of plate appearances, you know. I don't know. So it's kind of a weird answer. Not so much like Correa himself going to the Mets.
It's the trickle-down effect.
Yeah, it's kind of like the trickle-down of who else it impacts on that team. So.
Yeah, it's a great point, though, because, yeah, you know, Escobar, if he's going to play two-thirds of the games at third in a DC, that's a great third option type thing. And Beatty, we all have hope for him. That goes away. So it's a great point. And Marte, yeah, all of it trickle. When the Mets have, quote-unquote, the embarrassment of riches is what it's coming down to now. And that's going to always affect somebody in that lineup for sure. And last but not least here, what was your most surprising move for fantasy? And let's not say Carlos Correa, please.
I think it was Milwaukee trading like two solid veteran hitters, Colton Wong, Hunter Renfro.
Good call.
Really opens the door for some of their younger players, Garrett Mitchell, Bryce Terang, potentially Joey Weimer, to contribute this season. And I think a lot of those guys are kind of, you know, upside plays later in DCs and 50s and stuff like that. So I was kind of surprised to see them move on from those guys. I was like, well, they're, you know, they're going to rebuild. You know, they traded Hader last year. There was rumors of them potentially moving Corbin Burns, moved on from Wong and Renfro. So I'm like, man, you know, are they going to rebuild or what? But, you know, not, they still have a pretty solid team, you know. I don't know.
Well, we had the same questions with them last year when they went and traded Hader. Like, what are you doing? And there's Devin Williams. And, like, they make the pieces work. They find, for now, eventually, like, that luck will draw out where you trade a guy and the returns aren't what you hope they are. But that rebuild question, I'm with you because I was surprised by the Wong and Renfro part of it. But they have options. So they believe in their options, which is good, I guess.
Yeah. And, you know, who knows if Jesse Winker will stay healthy there. But, you know, it's got a lot of solid hitters. I mean, you still have Christian Yelich, Rowdy Tellez. You know, Terang could be pretty good as, like, a late middle infield target. So,
yeah, it'll
be an interesting team to track throughout the season because, you know, if they're kind of falling out of it, like, do they move on from their starters or what?
Well, there's been rumors already, like you said, of the Burns Woodruffs of the world. And I was joking with Fish on Monday night that, you know, people talk about stacking in fantasy, like with the Blue Jays a couple years back and everything. I'm like, well, if you really wanted to do it, the Brewers are cheap because you can get like the Telezes, the Adamases, the Yeliches, like that whole like middle of the lineup in the late, the early teens rounds and still put a decent start to your team. And if for some reason the Brewers show up, like if they all do their thing, that's an interesting build. Not saying it's a must, but it's doable. It's very doable. So it's just kind of fun.
So for sure. That's good.
All right, let's talk bullpens. He is the bullpen man at rotowire.com. He's got his great closer sheet. He's got depth charts. He's got next up in lines. He's got all kinds of stuff over that RotoWire, which is great. I'm not going to give away all the goodies. I'm just going to kind of tee him up and let him give you what he wants to give you on there because he puts a lot of time into those sheets. But we're going to go division by division. I have no particular order. I literally just put these down off the top of my head. I was impressed I could remember all teams. That shows you how much I do this stuff. But we'll start with the AL East because that's how things go in this world. And we'll start with the New York Yankees, get them out of the way right now. But it's one of those that, you know, Aroldis Chapman's still a free agent because he blew up last year. You got Clay Holmes doing his thing. I've always been a Johnny Lasagna fan. They have a lot of options there, which is what the Yankees do. There's even guys not on your list that the fourth, fifth guy down the list that you wouldn't be surprised at some point in time get some love. Like there's depth in New York. Hopefully they don't need it like they did last year. But how do you look at this Yankees bullpen?
Yeah, it's pretty good. I think Clay Holmes is the favorite for saves. I think he has top five closer upside. He just had an extended run of dominance dating back to, you know, when he was traded from the Pirates to the Yankees. Had a 76% ground ball rate last year, which led all relievers, but just had a couple injuries that marred his second half, you know, the back injury and a shoulder strain. So, you know, health will be the big question coming into 2023. And if he has some setbacks in that regard, they have a couple of different options they could turn to. Loaisiga pitched really well in the playoffs and towards the end of last year. Lou Trevino has closing experience. Greg Wiesert from, you know, was kind of brought up as their AAA closer in the minors. Wendy Peralta, Tommy Canley is coming back. So definitely have a lot of options they could turn to if Holmes doesn't work out. But Holmes is one of my biggest targets right now, just the range he's going. I think, you know, it's worth, you know, the risk taking him there where he's going.
Yeah, especially if you think the Yankees are going to win another 100 games or close to it, that's going to be a lot of save opportunities for Mr. Holmes. So, yeah, he's definitely one. He's not super expensive right now, which is great to see. Like over the last
3 weeks, you're probably going to say the same thing.
That's what I was going to say. The past month, yeah, he's 118 basically in DCs. Yeah, yeah. So that's so not
like round seven, round eight.
Yeah, that's not a crazy price tag, all things considered.
Yeah, if you miss on that whole top, you know, tier of closers, like he's one I'm really like targeting. Yeah,
he's also one of the good ones. Obviously, it's common sense. If you try to double tap, but you don't want to double tap super early, like get one early and then swing one through, like that's not a bad option too, to go that direction. Let's go to Boston, who a couple weeks ago we'd have a fun conversation trying to figure out this Boston bullpen. They got Chris Martin, which is a great ad. You know, Schreiber's had his moments. I think we're good now, Ryan. Kenley Jansen is the man in Beantown for now. And I think that means it's Kenley Jansen season in draft boards.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. He solidified a lot of questions in that bullpen.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was really, really high on John Schreiber early in draft season. So I was bummed to see, you know, those shares kind of get blown up in smoke, but you know, he could still, you know, be like the next man up if when Jansen's unavailable. I mean, Schreiber was just so good. Chris Martin was an excellent addition for Boston. Lowest walk rate in the league last year among relievers. So, so I don't think there's much more to talk about with Jansen. He's very clearly the closer. I think you can kind of take Matt Barnes off your DC radar now, now that there's not going to be a committee there. So, yeah.
Yep. I'm 100% with you. Seems like a pretty quick one. Barring an injury, it's Kenley Jansen time. Tampa Bay. Now, this is one that always is a conundrum. Seems like one guy ends up being the guy, but the guy is only like a 15 save guy at the best because there's so many of them that get involved. But they're all elite relievers for the most part, like when they get their chance, even just for innings fillers. So, you know, we've seen Fairbanks. We've seen guys they've traded in the past. Adam is awesome. I've seen his name in a lot of discussions. How are you approaching this Rays bullpen? Are you just hands off? Do you have guys you're looking to target? How are you going about it?
Yeah, I'm certainly targeting a few guys. And it really kind of depends where Pete Fairbanks goes. Don't really like him at his current ADP, but if he like slips to like the late or kind of early 200s, you know, think about him, you know, early to mid 200s, I would consider taking him just because he was so good. Second half last year, he was ridiculously good. And so was Jason Adam. I mean, those are the two guys I'm really kind of targeting right now. If you can pair them together, you could have, you know, 80% of the Rays saves. They do like to get everyone involved in the ninth inning. So I think last year it was 11 relievers combined for 44 saves. So, you know, there's certainly some risk in taking those guys, but if you can get 10 saves from, you know, Fairbanks or Adam, we're both really good. Otherwise, I think you're on the right track. Only thing with Fairbanks is he's averaged just 28 and a half innings per season for his career. So injuries are just a constant for him. But if he stays healthy, you know, sky's the limit. So, and then one guy I like really late, they traded Brooks Raley to the Mets. They have a couple lefties left over, Colin Pache, who I'm not really in on. He was kind of near the leaderboard in saves for that team last year, but he gives up too many home runs. I really like Garrett Clevenger. I watched him in the playoffs against the Guardians last year, and he was just looked nasty. So he's kind of like my dark horse I'm targeting after around 40 in drafts right now. I know others are on him too, even the leagues I'm not taking him Clevenger is being drafted. So, yeah, he's one I would keep an eye on post round 40.
Making a note for myself on that one. We will move on to the Toronto Blue Jays, where Jordan Romano was awesome last year. They've enhanced their pen a bit with a few more moves last season and early this offseason. And there's even been rumors of a potential Ryan Helsley trade to Toronto, which that would make things a little more interesting to me, Ryan. But right now, like, Jordan Romano's the guy, but there's options there in case something goes wrong. And, you know, Romano's he was close to bad injury at one point last year, it felt like. So what are you thinking here with Toronto?
Yeah, the Helsley rumor is interesting. I don't necessarily believe that. I don't know. It's so weird because, like, outside of Helsley and Gallegos, like, the Cardinals bullpen, like, isn't that great. So unless they're, like, really, really confident in Jordan Hicks, like, being, like, the next guy or being able to enter that mix for saves again, I don't see them trading Helsley. Yeah, Romano, he was, you know, I talked about him all last year. He was my fifth-ranked closer early last year. Really interested to see where he ends up in my rankings this season. It's probably going to be top 10 still, but walks were a little high, 8.1%. K rate dropped below 30% last year. So nothing too concerning there, but just something to kind of monitor with Romano, especially the walks. You know, and he was top five in saves. He went 36 saves last year. So John Schneider's back as the manager. He really kind of relied on Romano heavily towards the end of last year. So I'm sure he'll be up there in terms of the number of save chances he's getting. But, you know, they did acquire Eric Swanson from the Mariners in the Teoscar Hernandez trade. Adam Simber and Anthony Bass are really good, like, seventh inning guys. I think Swanson's kind of the eighth inning guy, next man up behind Romano, you know, and potentially could get even more work just because Swanson was so good last year. So, yeah, I'd still draft Romano with confidence, but I'm not sure he's still in the top five for me, maybe a little bit lower than that, but we'll see.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Still a very, very, very good reliever. If you can make it work. We'll head to Baltimore here, where Felix Bautista put his name on the map last year. Like, we kind of knew a little bit about him going to last year, but pure dominance last year. Ended up taking the closer's role when Jorge Lopez got traded to Minnesota. This is a guy that I've been loving to target in early drafts. Maybe I'm crazy because it's still Baltimore, but I think this guy's stuff is just nasty. So what do you have on the Baltimore bullpen?
Yeah, Bautista's a safe closer one, in my opinion. I think the leverage ladder is very clear cut in Baltimore, with Bautista as the favorite for saves. Little competition for the role. I mean, Dylan Tate was really good last season. They just added Michael Givens, who came back to Baltimore for a couple years with other teams. But Bautista, splitter, 53 and a 0.3% whiff rate, which was second best in the league for that pitch type last year. 35% K rate, 43% ground ball rate. I mean, not much more you can ask for from a closer. Like with Romano, we just talked about Bautista's walks are a little high, just under 10%. But I just don't think there's anyone else for that role. I do have a couple Bautista shares, and I did back him up with Tate, like, you know, in the last couple picks. You know, Tate doesn't really strike too many batters out, but he had the league's best sinker by run value, Statcast run value last year. Always posts upper 50s ground ball rate. Really was a workhorse for the Orioles. Pitched 73 and two-thirds innings last year. So I think he's pretty much clearly the next man up. And, you know, if something happens with Bautista, starts walking too many batters or gets hurt, I think they would go to Tate.
I like it. Let's go to the AL Central here, and we'll start with your guys, the Cleveland Guardians. Pretty sure this is a no-brainer, right, Ryan?
Yeah. not much to say about Emmanuel Clase. He's the number one closer for many. Like I said, I haven't prepared my initial closer rankings yet, but he's likely to be first or second on the list. Just a stud, man. Like, is ridiculous. It's just very lucky as a Guardians fan that I get to watch him every day. So, but beyond him, you know, the Guardians bullpen depth was a big question mark heading into last season, but like there were several guys that like really, really emerged. James Karinchak was like a question mark, but like came back, you know, after a couple months early in the season, 39% K rate, still walked nearly five batters per nine, but I mean, he was looking like his dominant self again. Trevor Stephan emerged as a reliable late inning reliever for Cleveland. And I don't know if people know this, but I really realize it, but Sam Henches, lefty out of the pen, at a velocity, had a ridiculous second half, 0.30 ERA, 0.57 whip, with 36 Ks over his final 29 to two thirds innings.
It's not bad.
It's just, yeah, I think that dude is pretty damn good. And someone I'm targeting late, like when you're in DCs and like all the good starters are gone post round 30, like he's one of the guys I'm picking up, like kind of bulk reliever types who will pitch 70 plus innings, probably have good ratios, could step into some saves, might even go back to the rotation at some point. Like he was a former starter, but you know, we'll see on that. But yeah, I really like Henches a lot. So yeah, Cleveland's bullpen really good.
Well, it makes sense for a team that even last year, like, how are they in the playoff contention? Well, because their starting pitching is good enough to go five or six, and you put a bullpen like that behind it, it keeps you in most ball games. Like, it really does. You don't have to be the – because the offense is always the question. It's like, they have J-Ram and who, and, you know, Oscar showed up, and guys started to hit a little bit, but Josh Naylor, I'm a huge fan of. They added Bell this year. So, like, they're actually kind of – as annoying as it was, like, when Lindor left and the J-Ram rumors and everything, they still kind of are putting it together right now. Like, the team isn't that bad. If you look at the whole picture, you look at the division they're in. So that bullpen, I'm glad you highlighted a lot of those names because it just proves why they're successful. When you have a bullpen like that, you can look to any day, and it goes in a big, big way. Detroit Tigers. This is a bullpen that is a lot different than the Cleveland bullpen at times. They have maybe depth. I'll put that nicely, but, you know, Gregory Soto got you the saves, also got you the whip heard around the world. There's a bunch of other options, revolving door in Detroit. So how are you attacking this team? It seems like a team that you can maybe take some late DC darts on some guys because there will be a revolving door potentially there. At the same time, it's the Detroit Tigers. So how do you go about this one?
Yeah. Gregory Soto, whenever I see him like go off the board in my drafts, I'm like, yeah, I'm like, thankful. Like,
I don't have to
do. You know, he had the third highest team save share among closers last year. He had 30 of the Tigers' 38 saves, which was almost 79%. But sixth worst walk rate among qualified relievers, close to 13%, and his strikeout rate dropped to like league average, basically 22.8%. So I really don't want any part of Gregory Soto at all, especially with the K rate plummeting, basically. I just don't want him. So before Joe Jimenez was traded, I was targeting him pretty heavily in DCs. So I thought he could easily step into the closer role in Detroit. But now I think Alex Lang is the reliever I want from this team. Had the best whiff rate in the league for a curveball and a changeup, both above 56%, 30%+ strikeout rate, 55% ground ball rate, passed round 34 ADP over the last 3 weeks. Not sure how much more you can ask for there. 11% walk rate was pretty high, but he's the guy I want, and he's really the only guy I want from the Detroit pen in drafts this year. So
I like that a lot. It makes me feel a little better because that's actually a guy I have been taking late in my 50s. So as kind of the guy I had circled next man up, and as a guy that has had Soto shares in the past, I know that train is eventually going to come off the rails, like for good. So, yeah, I like that call quite a bit. So the Chicago White Sox, this is going to be a fun one. I'm just going to incorporate our listener question into this. The War Dog great Twitter follower, great NFBC player. Let me get his wording correctly here. Because we know Liam Hendricks is the closer for now. And the question Wardog has is, for early drafters, how much do you weigh the chance that Hendricks could be a setup man in Queens when season starts? Because there has been serious discussions of the White Sox are shopping Liam Hendricks. And this is a team that in the past traded for Craig Kimbrell to have two closers. They went and got Graveman, who was a closer. So they've always appreciated like the double closer, just the depth in Chicago. And maybe this is why it gives them the opportunity to trade Liam Hendricks, one of the best closers in baseball, which is nuts. But then the kind of second part of this rise, obviously it'll open the door in Chicago, so we'll talk about the depth of the Chicago pen. But if Hendricks says he goes to New York, well, he's not taking Edwin Diaz's job. If he goes to like another team that has a locked-in closer, there's not that many that are better than him, but now he's not the closer. So let's talk White Sox bullpen, and how do you approach Liam Hendricks?
Yeah, shout out to the War Dog, season 38 Survivor, Edge of Extinction. He's the man. Love Survivor, so I'm a huge Survivor fan. So
nice.
The fact that War Dog's part of our fantasy baseball world community is pretty damn cool. But yeah, free agent market's pretty thin on effective closers. You know, Edwin Diaz signed really early during the offseason. And the available closers that are currently on the market, Taylor Rogers, Craig Kimbrell, Aroldis Chapman, haven't been effective. So keyword, you know, effective closers there. So it's not really a surprise to see Hendricks' name come up during the winter meetings. He's been one of the best closers in the league past 4 years, but there may be some signs of decline that the White Sox kind of want to get ahead of and trade him while he's still pretty valuable. I mean, first of all, he's been a slow starter past couple years. He has been able to overcome them both years. He's still been really, really good. But just kind of a trend to monitor, you know, as he approaches his kind of mid to late 30s. And then 3 weeks last year, he missed with a forearm strain. So, you know, he was pretty good after returning from that injury. But, you know, when you hear forearm strain and a pitcher, you kind of get scared. So, it's an interesting rumor. Perhaps the Correa and Adam Ottavino signings, you know, they just, their payroll's 380 some million now and even more with the luxury tax. So does that potentially play into the possibility of them acquiring Hendricks? You know, he was due to make $15 million next couple. I don't know. Yeah. Doesn't seem to be an issue for the Mets owner, but
what's a possible reason why
they wouldn't acquire him.
Yeah, and you're right there. What's funny, you mentioned the luxury tax. I saw a tweet today. They have $111 million in luxury tax.
That's more than the Guardians' like entire payroll.
Yeah, there's only 10 teams with a payroll above that. 10 in all of baseball, I think that's what I read. It's either 10 above or below. It's got to be above because there's so many more that are below that. So their luxury tax is like the 11th highest payroll in baseball. But sorry, as you were, I just thought that was amazing. Again, the Correa thing will not leave my head today. But yeah, so if Hendricks is there, he's the guy. If he's not there, are we just jumping straight to Graveman, or are there other options in Chicago that tickle your fancy?
Well, it's interesting because Graveman, he led the league, or led the AL with 27 holds last year. But his strikeout rate dropped to 23%. Since transitioning to the bullpen, he's got a 1.21 whip. So if you look at his just kind of his lines from recent seasons, 2021 kind of looks like an outlier. He's also made trips to the IL each of the past four seasons. So, you know, he's got that name value, but he's a much riskier bet for fantasy than you might expect. So I'm probably not going there, especially if he kind of creeps up draft boards. Let's see where he's at. He's ADP right now, 540. So, I mean, he's not going super early, but at least the last 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. That's like round 35, 36 ish. I don't know. I'm a lot more interested in Reynaldo Lopez yes. From that pen.
Yeah.
Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom has created weight management programs that are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. So stop chasing health trends and join the millions who have lost weight with Noom. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
It's just an intriguing spec for saves and DCs and NFBC 50s even. So I'd much rather kind of take the shot there than go to Graveman, who's, you know, 121 whip isn't bad, but it's not like great for a closer, you know.
No, not by any means.
So, but on the flip side of that, if Hendricks does get traded, say he does go to the Mets, does that completely eliminate him from the possibility for saves? No. You know, Buck Showalter did use Edwin Diaz earlier in games a few times last year. So, you know, that it would obviously take a hit to Diaz and Hendricks' projected save total. They're both still really good pitchers, but I could still see him getting 10 to 20 saves even if he gets traded to the Mets. You know, it's not out of the realm of possibility. So, but in terms of his ADP, past 3 weeks, he hasn't slipped past pick 41. Probably start slipping past the Devin Williams, Ryan Pressly tier, which is like pick 50. Maybe even the Bautista, Helsley, Jansen tier of closers. That's like pick 60 to 75. So I think from a, you know, depends on like how comfortable you are with certain closers. Like me, I'm really comfortable with Camilo Duvall around like pick 80. I might consider taking Hendricks maybe right after him, you know, around the Bednar, Scott Barlow range.
That's fair.
Generally pick 80 to 115 is where you see those guys go. So I'd probably rather have Clay Holmes than Hendricks right now with this rumor. But, you know, possible he gets traded somewhere else where he's still a bona fide clear-cut closer. So we'll see. It's an interesting rumor and certainly have its impacts if it comes to fruition.
Yeah, it might be one of the last major moves to take place because we kind of joked earlier about what's left on the market and everything. It's not a bunch of big names right now, but a Liam Hendricks trade would do a lot to keep the hot stove burning. And I'm with you. Like, I've looked right over him so far, and I've been all in on Hendricks in recent years. But it's like, give me Clase or Diaz, give me Iglesias, give me some of these guys, just with the uncertainty of Hendricks. It feels like it's almost more than rumors. Like, they're really pushing the narrative, like, we want to trade Liam Hendricks, is what it feels like. It's more than just a rumor, it feels like. I could be totally wrong. So not knowing if he'll be a setup man, like, does he get the Iglesias treatment and go to Atlanta behind Jansen type thing, so or the Mets situation? Or does he get, you know, like Jorge Lopez went to Minnesota and he was a closer. Like, does he get a job like that? So they're not going to trade him in division, I wouldn't think. But, like, a situation like that could be interesting. And, maybe he gets traded to Arizona. Arizona's yeah. actually looking to move, like, Varsho and these outfielders. Like, hey, that's something that actually could physically work for both sides of the spectrum. And then he's still a legit dude. And now you're thinking, okay, man, I could have taken him as, like, the fourth closer off the board again. So, like you said, it's all about the risk-reward. So, kind of to War Dog's question, I've just been avoiding him right now. I like how you put it, though, even with the questions, and even if he was the second man in, say, New York and gets what he's 10 to 15 saves at least, he should fit in that Bednar range. So, now he's like a the 10th, let's just say 10th closer off the board, move him down there. So I can live with that. I just can't live with him at his current cost, and his cost isn't budging much, even with the rumors. So yeah. I'm with you on that one. That's a good way of breaking it down there. And I love the Ronaldo call because that's another guy I've had circled late in drafts.
Yeah,
even for his viability, like as a mid-innings guy, he was great last year.
Yeah, I think Hendricks is – we've probably seen the peak from him. It's not to say he's not a good pitcher. And he's still really, really good. Like, I mean, his command slipped last year a little bit, but he still had one of the highest K-minus walk percentages among relievers. Like, he's still an elite guy. So, yeah, I don't know. It would be really interesting to see if the Mets acquired him, how they would, you know, distribute saves between him and Diaz, because, you know, they showed the willingness to use Diaz earlier. And I still think there's moves to be made in the Mets bullpen. Like Adam Ottavino was a good, you know, re-signing him was a good move. Trading for Brooks Raley was a good move. I mean, they lost like four relievers from their pen to free agency. So, they might need another guy, and Hendricks could certainly address that. So,
we'll have to wait and see. Let's go to the Kansas City Royals. Always an interesting one because, you know, the team doesn't win that many ball games, but they seem to have usually have a closer in play. And last year, Scott Barlow was good enough. He was good enough to get you saves. I was always been a Josh Stillman guy. He battled injuries, didn't quite have what we were hoping for. Still showed some signs at the end of the year. They have some options there. Still the Royals in the end. So how do you approach Kansas City?
Yeah, Scott Barlow's the best guy by far in that bullpen right now. I mean, they have new coaches, new manager. Matt Quatraro is the new manager, new pitching coach. Brian Sweeney was the former Guardians bullpen coach. So right now we just have no idea how they intend to manage the bullpen. But from a talent perspective, Barlow's very clearly the best guy. I do have some interest in Dylan Coleman late. He was utilized pretty heavily during his first full season in the big leagues last year, but eighth worst walk rate among relievers, nearly five batters per nine innings, and he's a two pitch pitcher. So I don't know, like, might need to add something to his arsenal to really kind of take the next step, you know, ascending the high leverage ladder there. But yeah, Barlow, I just don't see how he's not the closer unless he gets traded.
I'm with you there. It's a tough one, just a tough team in general, let's put it that way. And one thing that Ryan has on this chart, which is very nice, it just even lets you know how many saves did every team have last year, and the Royals had 33 total saves. So let's just do the math on how successful that makes you. It's tough to earn the love that you need for your fantasy teams there. Let's go to the Minnesota Twins as we wrap up the AL Central. We all loved Duran last year. He had his injury concerns. Lopez came over, did not pitch like he did in Baltimore. Is it the Duran show, or are we still kind of looking at other options?
I have no clue. Like, this is the hardest pen to really kind of figure out, because they have other options that are good. So, you know, Duran's the most exciting, but I think the Twins are probably more likely to be flexible with his roles because he's, you know, so good. Jorge Lopez, they acquired last year, kind of fell apart in the second half. Walk rate really kind of ballooned. So depends how he's really pitching to see if he gets opportunities. Griffin Jacks made successful transition to full-time relief last year, added nearly 3 miles per hour velocity, adjusted his pitch mix, slider, replaced his fastball as his primary pitch, and had the best season of his career so far. So he could be like an interesting one, but I see him kind of being more like the, you know, middle relief guy, eats up innings, pitches a bunch of innings, kind of like Barlow. You know, Scott Barlow has pitched 74 and a third past two seasons. See Jack's, you know, approach 80 innings. And then they have, you know, Caleb Thielbar, one of the best hard hit rates in the league, allowed, but only one career save for him. And then a guy I loved last year, Jorge Alcala. Yeah. He had surgery towards the end of the season last year, expected to be ready for spring, but we have no idea how he's going to look. So this one's kind of the toughest one for me. Probably fading Duran at his ADP right now. If he slips, I'd consider it, but I don't know. I think Griffin Jacks is the one I'll probably have the most of from this pen. Just because no one's really targeting him or drafting him much. So, and I really like what he did. So
I like it. I like it because we've seen Jacks have his moments. Then you mentioned what he did to top it off. And the biggest thing you mentioned there with Duran is we know who he is and how good he is. I can't pay that price with this, with what's going on. And that's my conundrum. And yeah, you mentioned Alcala. That was one that stung because he looked so good. And then just boom, the injury happened. So yeah, it does. Let's go to the AL West, and we'll go to the Houston Astros, the defending World Series champions. Still the Ryan Pressly show until otherwise noticed, huh?
Yeah, I don't think there's much to discuss for Houston. Pressly is someone I would confidently target as my closer one. And Rafael Montero, Brian Abreu, Hector Neris, they're all great for Draft Champions League. So I would, you know, certainly look to those guys later in those drafts. And, you know, Montero and Abreu probably for 50s, which is the 12-team draft and hold format too. So, yeah, not much to discuss here. I mean, Presley's been injured a couple times recently, so that's why we saw Montero get double-digit saves. But who knows, if we saw a career year from Montero, and, you know, any one of these guys could get saves at any time when Presley's unavailable. So, I like Pressly a lot.
Yeah, that's why, just because of how good Houston is and the options they'll have, like Montero and Neris, I at least look at late in DCs, because I'm thinking there's going to be a window where Pressly, because he it feels like he always spends at least one IL stint somewhere. And yeah, that just, and so the DC format, that's one of those, like, I'll spec and take my chances and see where we go on those for sure.
Yeah.
Texas Rangers here. You got, you know, Jose Leclerc, Jonathan Hernandez had his moments last year. Barlow never came back from injury. There was a lot of options towards the end of the year there, and not many of them panned out to be great. But how are you looking at Texas going into this season?
I'm kind of surprised they haven't added anyone aside from picking up Leclerc's $6 million team option.
That makes sense.
I could see, like, them taking a shot on Chapman or Kimbrel, even Taylor Rogers. I don't know. It doesn't seem to be, like, a super deep bullpen, aside from, like, because Brock Burke pitched a bunch of innings, but, like, he's not going to, like, probably factor into the saves mix. Maybe they re-sign Matt Moore, who's currently still a free agent. I'm not sure, but Jose Leclerc, really like him right now. You know, I was on Rob DiPietro's Pull Hitter podcast recently, and he kind of – and more I – dug into him when writing his player outlook for RotoWire. I was like, yeah, this guy's pretty good. So slider and changeup had whiff rates over 42%. His fastball kind of got crushed, but the other pitches were really good. And he had six of Texas's final eight saves. So got the momentum going into 2023. We don't know if Joe Barlow is going to be healthy or not. He'd be the only other reliever I'm currently interested in from Texas, as their roster currently stands. Really no interest in Jonathan Hernandez. You know, throws triple digits, but yeah, just I'm not super impressed with him. So yeah, Leclerc's security is probably pretty good right now, unless they sign someone else. So
all right, we'll stick with Jose Leclerc there at Texas. It's, you never know, they're spending more money than I thought. So you never take them off the board as a surprise spender. The Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim have done great things to shore up their offense this year. I'm very impressed with things. Bullpen, to me, still a question mark. You know, they brought Carlos Estevez in. We saw Hergit, Tapera, and others have chances last year after Iglesias left. It seems kind of like an unknown situation, similar to Minnesota, Ryan. But how are you looking at the Angels?
Yeah, it's pretty unknown, I think. But if you look at it from what we know from last year, you know, Phil Nevin, they retained him as their manager. So We know after Raisel Iglesias was traded, they kind of used a quasi committee with Jimmy Hergett, Ryan Tepera. Hergett tallied half of the Angels' 16 saves after Iglesias was traded, but Nevin often called on him earlier in games in high leverage spots. His curveball and slider were really good, but sinker was just destroyed. 397 batting average against, 603 slugging when he threw it. So that kind of concerns me a little bit with Hergett. Tepera had five saves after the Iglesias trade, but he's a free agent after 2023. So if the Angels are out of contention for the playoffs at the deadline, we could see him on the move. So my favorite target from this pen is Estevez. He had a career best season last year, finally escapes Colorado, 25 career saves, and away from Coors Field has a career 3.51 ERA, 1.26 WHIP, which aren't amazing, but they're way better than his splits at Coors Field. So he's really the only one I'm targeting. I was looking at Tapir a little bit, and I think maybe the team's additions of Drury, Renfro, you know, it could be more so in playoff contention this year. But there's always at risk, you know, that they're out of it by the deadline and then they just move on from whoever's on an expiring contract. So Pierre's kind of interesting. I've taken shots on him late. So, but I really like Estevez where he's at right now.
Yep, that seems to be a common trend. Seattle Mariners. Seattle Mariners, this is a very good bullpen. Very good bullpen. Pat Sewald or Sewald seems to get most of the love, but a lot of talented guys back there that could all earn saves. It's almost like Tampa Bay in a way, but maybe a little more clear-cut, where it seemed like Sewald got the main gist of it, but Munoz and others back there. So how are you attacking this Mariners bullpen come draft season?
Yeah, I love Sewald and Munoz, but, you know, Sewald tallied half of the team's 40 saves last year, but the Mariners recently announced he underwent heel and elbow surgeries. Expected to be ready for spring training, but that's a little, like, concerning, right? Like, I don't know. And then Andrés Munoz broke out last year, but he's got a couple of big question marks, too. First, is he going to be healthy? He went under the knife too this offseason, foot surgery. And if he's healthy, will he get more save opportunities? We don't know that yet. So recently updated my closer and waiting rankings for RotoWire. It's right there on the closer grid. And I moved Diego Castillo up pretty high on that list to sixth, my closer and waiting rankings. Munoz is actually first on that list, but I moved Castillo up just because, you know, he's got the closing experience, and we just don't know if these off-season surgeries are going to kind of delay the seasons for Munoz and Sewald or what. So, yeah, love both of those guys if they're healthy, but those are risks you have to kind of weigh when you're deciding whether or not to draft him.
Yep. No, it's a fun bullpen, lots and lots of options, what at least helps with the question marks, but yeah, the injuries, especially the surgeries on Sewald, is not the most warm feeling when you're drafting them. Not the most extreme price tag, but still not the best for sure. Let's go to the Oakland Athletics as we wrap up the American League here. You got Jimenez had his moments, Jackson had his moments. They just signed Trevor May, who legit could have an argument to be the closer on this team. There's a lot of moving parts in Oakland, so how are you breaking down this Oakland bullpen?
I'm guessing Domingo Acevedo will open the season as the closer in Oakland. Only had a 22% strikeout rate, but he had a 16% swinging strike percentage. So we could see his strikeout rate improve next year if he kind of maintains that. And he was the closer to close out the season. And another reason I think he'll continue to be the closer is Danny Jimenez, Zach Jackson coming back from shoulder injuries. I don't really have interest in either of them. Jackson was among the AL leaders in the holds category, but he had one of the worst walk rates in the league. And then Jimenez had shoulder problems twice last year that he didn't address this offseason at all through surgery or anything. So I just have no interest in Jimenez. You mentioned Trevor May, who just signed with the A's. He's the most experienced reliever in their pen. Should be featured plenty in high leverage, but only has 12 career saves. So who knows if, you know, he would even sniff double digits in that category. He also missed 3 months last year with a triceps injury. So I don't know. I'm probably not in on May. The two guys I'm most interested in are Acevedo and AJ Puck. Puck was pretty good last year. Didn't really use him too much in the closer role, but still pitched pretty well earlier in games. Probably fall into several wins, plenty of holds if you're in a league that counts holds. So those are the two guys I really want from the A's. But again, it's like how many saves are they going to have? You know, a pretty bad team. So
yeah,
no offense, Scott Jensen.
Yeah, I know Scott's good. I feel Scott's pain for once. I'll tell you that much. So we're in the same boat there. Front office is doing what? Not a lot of save chances there. Interesting relievers all could get traded at any point in time. It feels like so. Just buckle up and see what happens. Let's go to the National League, and we'll start with the NL East, and we'll start with the New York Mets, and we'll start with Edwin Diaz as one of the top two closers in baseball.
Yeah, struck out 50% of the batters he faced last year. It's just insane. You know, and we talked about him a little bit earlier. Buck Showalter used him a little bit earlier in games a few times. We'll see if that trend continues. But, you know, as long as he's, you know, they don't acquire Hendricks too, I think you can be pretty confident in drafting Diaz. He's pretty damn good.
Yes, he is. Not a whole lot else to be said on that one. He's the man. He's like 1A to 1B to the claw. So you guys pick your poison there. Like, I have no arguments there. Pick your guy. We'll go to the Atlanta Braves, though, where Jansen's out of town, and it's Jose Iglesias' season, which I've always thought it was when they made the trade last year. I was like, they made the trade. He's getting paid a lot of money still. Why would they not have him close starting in 2023? There's still some people that didn't believe it, and I get it. Anything can happen, but he's the guy, and he was filthy even when he wasn't the closer last year, Ryan. Like, he was very, very good. So I like him a lot. I've always had him as a top, you know, 5-6 closer for me, and to me, he slides right back into that neck of the woods.
Yeah, I haven't decided where I'm going to fall on him yet because he was pretty dominant over the final 2 months last year. 0.34 ERA, 0.84 whip, 15 holds over his final 26 and a third innings. Definitely the guy right now, but lost a little bit of elo last season. Still was very effective, so maybe it's not as big of a concern. But what I'm concerned about is Atlanta is just stacked with guys that have closing experience on their roster. AJ Minter, Joe Jimenez, Kirby Yates, Nick Anderson. Like, they could just easily turn to any one of those guys if they're pitching well and Iglesias isn't. So I think Iglesias is probably fine, but that's, you know, kind of in the back of my mind. Definitely a top 10 closer for me, but I just don't know where within the top 10 he'll be. Maybe he's top 5 for me. Maybe he's not. I don't know. But, you know, we'll see, you know, if they add to that bullpen anymore or not. But, yeah, he's an interesting one for me.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. But
I definitely want some Rysel because I could see him like leading the league in saves. But
oh yeah,
like I don't want like too much of him.
That's so fair. That's fair because you do have a lot of options there in that bullpen as a potential revolving door if all heck breaks loose. Let's go to the Nationals. We're talking about all heck breaking loose. That was a mess last year if you tried to figure out that bullpen, and we're back to Kyle Finnegan potentially this year and other options. So how are you looking at Washington? Like, is it even worth trying to roster these guys, or is there someone you are targeting?
Yeah. There's two arms I'm interested in from the Nationals. Tanner Rainey underwent Tommy John surgery last year, so he's likely to miss all of 2023, so you can kind of safely rule him out. The two arms I like are Kyle Finnegan. He's one of my favorite closer two, closer three targets right now. Not super expensive. One of the more experienced guys just from, you know, being there for the past couple of years and having, you know, been in safe situations the past 2 years. The other guy I really like is Hunter Harvey. He's probably the most talented reliever in Washington, but injuries have wrecked his career. He's a major health risk, but if his health prevails, he could easily factor in the mix for saves. He was really good last year. So
yeah. I love the Harvey shout. I have a couple shares of Hunter Harvey in late rounds because I remember the pedigree. I was there with Baltimore. It looked really, really good. So yeah
former hopefully. First round pick, great K rate. Yeah,
just very, can very stay good healthy. That's the big question. Let's go to Philadelphia, where they made some moves last year, brought in David Robertson. He's gone. Domingo's had his moments. I've always been a Jose Alvarado fan. They bring in Matt Strom, who's been very good out of the pen. How are you doing the Phillies bullpen?
Yeah, Rob Thompson, their manager, really shifted to pretty much a committee after Corey Knebel was demoted from closing duties. So thing with Dominguez, Ranthing Dominguez, just his walk rate is just so high. So is Jose Alvarado's. But I think Alvarado just has more upside. He had the highest whiff rate and any cutter in the league at 55.7%. 14.3 K per nine was career best for him, third highest among qualified relievers. And even though his walk rate was still above 10%, he cut it by 7.5% last year. So I really like Alvarado. A lot of his other Statcast metrics were 98th percentile or higher, 22 holds. So if you're in a holds league, you should rack up plenty of those. And I think there's upside there for, 15 saves if, he gets more looks in the ninth. But he's got to keep his control under control. And because the walks have always been an issue for him. But he's the one I like most out of this pen. I could just see them mixing, Dominguez, Alvarado, Strom, Connor Brogdon, all those guys getting saves. So it's not really a pen I'm targeting, but, it's a good team. So, you want to get at least someone late as a spec.
Yeah, because they're going to get plenty of wins. They should. It is a tough division, so maybe not. But, definitely options in the back of that bullpen.
Could also see them adding someone too, like one of those, taking a shot on one of those remaining free agent closers, or even someone like Andrew Chafin would be like really good. That would be another lefty, but they already have a couple of those. But I don't know. I don't think, like, among the playoff teams, they had the worst bullpen out of all the playoff teams, and they still made the World Series. But I still think they could use the upgrade the pen.
And they've proven they're not afraid to add too much. Like, they added Robertson and Knebel. Like, they're not worried about having too many guys that could close type thing. So,
yeah,
definitely an option there. Miami Marlins, on the other hand, might not win a lot of games. They might, though. They're just like that pesky team that could surprise you, could not. Dylan Floro, he's had his moments. He's also been rumored to be traded so many times. Tanner Scott was good at getting saves, but it was ugly at times when he went and got those saves. So what are you doing here? You drafting Floro, and then when they traded him, you drop him? Or what are you trying to do here with Miami?
Yeah, if Floro's kind of falls into a range where I want to get, 10 to 15 saves, I would take him. But the very likely outcome, since he's a free agent after the season, is he's going to get traded. Marlins probably won't be competitive. And I would be surprised if Floro's not the closer in the first half, just because you would want to try to build up his trade value. So, perhaps Tanner Scott gets the job again if that trade happens. Maybe Stephen Okert. I just don't want any Marlins.
Yeah, it's not really worth the hassle, the headache that's going to take place there. I'm 100% with you.
And Anthony Bender's out for the year. I would have had interest in him, but he's probably out for Tommy John. So. The whole season. Yeah. So
I've done the Floro thing, I think, in one draft. It's like you said, give me 10-15 and I'll piece it together from there. But other than that, I don't want a whole lot.
Right? Like, Floro is a good reliever. Like, that's not, it's not like completely crap on him. He's good, but it's just not a
sexy. Well, we already know, like you said, we already know the outcome. We already know the outcome, basically. He's going to get traded. It's going to be as like a setup man or a seventh inning guy more often than not. So you're going to lose him after that. That's the downside.
I rolled the step into the Marlins.
It's very possible. I think Floro would be a fun late round pick in a redraft league. No, I don't care. I'll just drop him when he gets traded, but eat those saves now as a late pick. guess we'll have to wait and see how that one plays out. NL Central, let's go to those St. Louis Cardinals. We joked about the Ryan Helsley trade rumors. He was very, very good last year, but so was Gallegos. Gallegos can't be downplayed at all. So they got that going for him, but you mentioned there's not a whole lot else to love in St. Louis.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like Gallegos. He's just going so much later than Helsley is and could definitely finish with more saves than him. You know, he signed the extension with them towards the end of last year for 2 years, so we know he's going to be part of their high-leverage plans moving forward. You know, from a skills perspective, Helsley is a lot better than Gallegos, but also some injury risk from the past. So, you know, something to monitor with Helsley. If I would try to like target like both of these guys in a draft, like especially a DC, just so you're kind of covered, because, you know, I don't really see anyone else kind of joining the mix for saves. Like Jordan Hicks is a little intriguing to me, but it's just patrol is just so spotty. Like, I don't know, like his, that was a weird experiment as a starter with him last year.
Yeah,
I don't know why they would do that, just because his walk rate's just been terrible for years. So, but it would be interesting to see if like he gets that under control, like if he rejoins the mix for saves in St. Louis. So like it's possible, but I'm not like betting on that. I do want like at least one Hicks this year, just as a spec. But yeah, I like both Helsley and Gallegos. I mean, they're both just solid guys, and Helsley's got the more upside, obviously. But I'm just more interested in Gallegos at his price, and his, you know, he's just been so good. So.
Yeah, I've been with you. Gallegos has been like staring me in the face in a lot of drafts. So I've taken him a few spots, just looking at the value, looking at what he's done, looking at what he could do, basically as a potential guy in waiting. But the Hicks comments I like a lot because it was very confusing last year. Let's stretch him out to be a starter and then not stretch him out, really.
Yeah.
That was confusing. He showed some signs of life and he was kind of not there. Was at one time going to be the lead closer for St. Louis a couple years ago. So there's something there, like you're saying, which is kind of intriguing. Still a little concerning as well.
Yeah, he settled into like a multi-inning reliever for them. So like, I don't know.
Yeah, so it's weird. Yeah. Very
weird situation. But
you know what else is weird or just confusing or depressing? Depends on how you want to look at it. The Chicago Cubs, their bullpen situation. They bring in Brad Boxberger. We saw Brandon Hughes was very successful at times last year. Rowan Wick still hanging around for those that like the Rowan Wick quote unquote experience. There's all kinds of things going on with the Cubbies. So how are you approaching this, or is it just kind of a stay away situation?
I'm staying away for the most part. There is one reliever I like from this team. I'll get to in a minute, but they've just had a trend of signing a guy, a veteran reliever for 1 year, and then trading them if they're out of playoff contention. And Cubs are a little better this year. They look like they could be like sneaky good, but you know, they did it 2 years ago with Kimbrel, last year with David Robertson, signed him to a 1 year deal, moved on from him, traded him when they were out of playoff contention. So Boxberger, I mean, could be the guy in like the first half. He was second in the league with 29 holds last year, but getting up there is not like super good. So he's not like somebody I'm necessarily targeting, even though he's probably the favorite for saves right now. Rowan Wick, you mentioned 147 career whip. Don't want any part of that. Manuel Rodriguez, nearly as many walks as strikeouts in his big league career. Not interested. The guy I really like is Cody Hoyer. He was part of the Kimbrel deal to the White Sox a couple years ago. And he's, you know, coming back from Tommy John surgery. But I don't know. It's like nobody really is like super on him. But if you look at the DC overall winner last year, he took Jose Leclerc as one of his last round picks, right?
That worked out pretty well.
Yeah, it worked out pretty well. Exactly. Hoyer is obviously one of their, you know, is in their long-term plans. So whenever he's healthy enough to pitch, probably doesn't step back into that mix for saves right away, but second half, I could see him definitely taking over and getting 10 to 12 saves. So he's the guy I'm really targeting from this pen later in drafts. And it just, you know, you see Tommy John and you're just like, you see it in a draft, especially a DC where you're not able to like make any moves in season. And you're just like, I don't know. But then I kind of remind myself, well, hey, there's guys that come back from serious injuries that are good pitchers that, you know, can still be valuable in half a season. And at that point in the draft, you're probably past around 40, around 45.
And
you could take worse shots at that
Cody makes me laugh because he was the one that tweeted out he was having surgery last year before like any beat reporters or anything. I remember we were all on Twitter going, wait, what? Because it was before drafts, before the season started, and he was the guy most of us were specking on for to have the closers gig, and all of a sudden he's having Tommy John surgery. We're like, what the hell just happened?
Yeah.
That was a fun one. Very, very fun one. Milwaukee Brewers, this is one where I get a lot of flack for this, but I'm a huge Devin Williams believer. I think he's legit, like, ace closer type stuff. People think I'm crazy. You can tell me if I'm crazy. I don't take offense to it, but to me, it's Devin Williams. I don't care what else, really, but what do you got from Milwaukee?
I don't think you're crazy at all. Like, Devin Williams might be my number one closer. He's really, really good.
I say this because that early DC we were in, Ryan, I caught so much shit for taking Devin Williams. And I was like, this guy is legit. Like, once he got the job, he's the best one out there almost.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, who else are they going to turn to in that?
That's my point. Like, yeah.
There's no one else, really. Career high 15 saves last year, and he got 7 of Milwaukee's final 9 saves close out the year. So, you know, when they first traded Hader, it was kind of like a committee a little bit. Between Devin Williams, Matt Bush, Taylor Rogers was there at that point. So they kind of mixed and matched a little bit. But down the stretch, Williams was the guy. He's a stud. 99th percentile ranking or better in 9 different StatCast metrics. I mean, what else can you ask for? I mean, the only thing is, you know, if the Brewers' offense kind of falls off a cliff, like, I do worry about wins a little bit.
Yeah.
With that team, and especially like what they do if they decide to rebuild, like, would they even consider trading Williams? Like, I don't know, but yeah, I really, really like, I don't blame you for taking Williams there, thinking he's really good because he's amazing.
Okay, that makes
sense. Yeah, walk rate, you know, you kind of, everyone has their downfalls, but when you have a pitch that's nicknamed the Airbender, I mean, you're probably going to walk some people.
As long as he doesn't hit any walls, we're okay.
Like, yeah.
That's the concern. That's really the only thing that's beaten him so far.
Yeah. Don't punch a wall.
Yeah. But I'm a big fan. So that makes me feel better because you were in that room on the live Zoom when I caught all kinds of shit for that. So I was confused. I was like, what did I miss? Did he like lose his job somehow, people? Like, what's going on here?
So I think I was like speculative too at first because it was like August at that point and the season wasn't over. And he was still kind of splitting save opportunities with other people.
Yeah.
Because it was like right after the Hader trade. So at first I was like, wait, but now I'm like fully on board. Yeah. It's a good pick.
Sweet. So the Cincinnati Reds, where Alexis Diaz was awesome last year. He didn't have the full-time gig last year, but just his overall stuff, great. Entering 2023, everyone's speculating it's his. But then again, it's the Reds, Ryan. And last year, if you tried to play speculation game throughout a fab season with the Reds, you lost half your budget. So how are you going? Is it Alexis Diaz's time, or is there someone else you're looking to target in Cincinnati?
I'm going to give you several reasons why I'm fading Alexis Diaz. First, it's the Reds, like you said. Like, David Bell's used a committee the past 2 years, so who knows how many saber opportunities he'll get. Two, TJ Antone, Tony Santian are coming back, both probably high leverage relievers, probably part of that saves mix. Three, Diaz is an extreme fly ball pitcher in a bad home park. His 178 BABIP was second lowest among relievers, and you'll have that when you're a fly ball pitcher, but you know, probably pretty lucky on the ratio side. High walk rate, near 13%, and only 2 pitches, so fastball, slider. And now we made that work, but I just don't want any Alexis Diaz. for all those reasons. Now, I've taken a few shots on some of the guys I mentioned, like Antone, passed round 45 in a draft champions, but other than that, I'm not really interested in anyone here.
So. I was wondering about the Antone because I liked him a lot before he got hurt. Like, yeah, the talent level was great. So, yeah, you can get him super late, I guess, as a spec. Because Diaz, I think, is good, but the Reds, man. It's the Reds. Another team where this kind of stings, Pittsburgh Pirates. You know, David Bednar is the guy, unless he gets traded, which he did somehow didn't last year, which was surprising. But the problem is they don't save games. They just don't win games. They just it's just a mess there. He's one of the best closers in baseball, or best relievers, I'll say, in baseball. Just closing is a tough game for him. So are you looking at Bednar or anybody else in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, Bednar is very clearly the guy in Pittsburgh. His stability when he's healthy is probably one of the highest in the leagues just because he's got so little competition for saves. The guy I might take a shot or two on in the last few rounds of a draft champions would be Yeri De Los Santos. A little bit interesting from, you know, decent strikeout rate, lots of ground balls. And, you know, Bednar's missed a few months last year with a back injury and, you know, back injuries for pitchers, a little scary. But I would be comfortable. I wouldn't be comfortable with Bednar as like a closer one, but like as a closer two for sure. And I don't know. Yeah, there's really not much else to say because there's just no one else to really talk about.
It's dreadful in Pittsburgh.
It's pretty bad.
So yeah. Hopefully they get their Andrew McCutchen reunion that's rumored out there. Give him something to look forward to for the final season of his career. Let's go to the NL West and wrap this bad boy up here. The Los Angeles Dodgers. They haven't just lost half of their starting lineup, it feels like. They've lost a big chunk of their bullpen, a.k.a. their closing situation. There's still some very qualified people back there, don't get me wrong. But how are you looking at it? Because you have Gratterall, you have Hudson, you have a handful of guys that are good, but who's going to be the man?
I think they're all going to be the man. Like, yeah. I really, really like this pen. Like, there's a lot of really good relievers here that could, you know, pitch in either a handful of saves or get, you know, 10 to 15. My favorite's probably Daniel Hudson. We do have to monitor his health. He's coming back from a torn ACL, but I think Hudson would allow Phillips to kind of pitch, you know, the higher leverage role earlier in games. Phillips, he had the best ERA among qualified relievers, third best whip, career best marks in innings, strikeouts, holds. Only got two saves, but, you know, Kimbrel's out of the picture now, could potentially be more of a factor in that category in 2023. Brustar Gratterall, he had two more trips to the IL last year for shoulder elbow issues. He actually looked like he was going to take over the closer role before he got hurt. So you really kind of have to weigh like the health risk versus his upside. Did get four saves. So, you know, high ground ball rate. So I really think it's kind of, you know, when I think it's like a matchup spaced type thing. Like if you need some ground balls, you know, in the ninth, throw Gratterall on there. And then one of my biggest targets right now is Alex Vesia, top lefty in that bullpen, one of the best four-seamers in the league, 73.8% in-zone contact, was fourth best among relievers. And then from mid-July on, he had an 0.36 ERA, 0.72 whip, and 40 Ks in 25 and two-thirds innings. Like, that dude's pretty good, so pretty cheap right now. So he's like one of my biggest targets late in DCs right now. And I really like all those guys we just talked about. Like, I think all of them have the potential for 10 or more saves.
Yeah, no, they definitely have it. When you win 110 games a year, you can have a few closer quality pitchers back there be productive for you. San Francisco Giants, Camilo Duvall seems to be the guy. Last year, you know, we went into the season and there's always the rumors you might, you know, platoon, this, that, and the other. In the end, he was pretty much the guy, at least on the very strong side of a platoon. As long as he's not walking guys, he's filthy. And that's been a trend with a lot of these guys we've talked about, high walk rates. This is what these guys do. When you throw as hard as they do, as much movement as they do, there's going to be some outings where you're just like, damn it. But that's just the way it goes. But you said you're a believer in Duvall. Is that the only guy you're looking to in San Francisco, or is anybody else?
Yeah, that's the only one. I think they could – you know, from a depth perspective, it looks like they need to add some relievers. I know on RotoWire we only have like
they got money for it now, so they can.
Listed. Yeah, yeah. So I mean, maybe they just sign all three of like Kimbrel, Chapman, and Taylor Rogers. I think Taylor Rogers kind of makes sense because his brother is there. Like,
makes they're twins. Let's add, like at least we can do a marketing campaign, make some money since you need more of it. Go for it.
Yeah, yeah. But right now, Duvall is really the only one I'm interested in, and you know, hopefully they don't add anyone. I don't really think any of those guys would kind of jeopardize his, you know, primary save share there. But like you said, he tends to walk some guys. So
yeah,
but yeah, I like the ball.
That'll be the conundrum. San Diego Padres. Now this is another team that seemed like used to have closers on lockdown, and they do again. Josh Hader. After you know, there was the reports coming out of the stuff he was handling between his you know the birth of his child and the issues there with his wife and everything, and there's a lot of stuff outside the field that we don't always pay attention to. It seemed like once that kind of got better, that situation got much better, Hader got much better again. And he finished the year looking, at least in the postseason especially, looked like the Josh Hader of old. So are you believing he's the guy, nothing to worry about there, or the blips we saw last year concern enough to dig in on some San Diego Padres relievers?
No, well, I am interested in Robert Suarez, but I think Hader's very clearly, I have no concerns with him. You know, he did make some mechanical tweaks towards the end of last year. San Diego's got one of the best pitching coaches in the league, Ruben Niebla. He was a big reason for the Guardians, you know, pitching factory success before moving on to San Diego. So he noticed a mechanical issue with Hader. They tweaked it. It actually unlocked more velocity. He hit triple digits for the first time in his career towards the end of the season. So, I really think, you know, he has the potential to be, you know, obviously a top closer in the league. We've seen that before. So I wouldn't let a few bad outings really kind of deter you from drafting him, because there was really just a couple blow-ups that really kind of impacted his ratios. Sure. And that final month in the playoffs really just kind of gives me confidence to draft him. I mean, I took him in the first, I think the first round of the, might have been a Gladiator. I know I took him early recently. Yeah. I think it was a Gladiator, but yeah, I have no concerns with Hader.
I took him in the first round of my Gladiator last week with my second one I did. So, yeah, I'm with you. I'm believing in Hader as well. Colorado Rockies, Daniel Bard was one of the best closers in baseball last year, things you don't hear often with Colorado Rockies pitchers. It's also elevated his price a bit this draft season, and I'm always concerned about any pitcher in Coors, even how good he was for 1 year. So what's your thoughts on Daniel Bard and the rest of that bullpen?
Yeah, I think we can expect some ratio regression from Bard. His BABIP was pretty low, but you know he ditched the fastball for a sinker, and that led to you know more ground balls. You know, six most saves in the league with 34 through you know the sinker to a lot of left-handed batters who hit just 174 against him last year, compared to 319 in 2021. So he really improved against left-handed hitters. And once again, there's like no competition for that role, really. You know, they added Pierce Johnson and Brent Suter. I don't really see them challenging Bard for the closer role. So he will be 38, but he still throws like 98 miles an hour. So, you know, I took Bard. I know I said on a podcast recently that I'd be confident with Bard as my closer one, and actually had that happen recently, and I feel okay about it. So I'm not too concerned, other than the fact that Colorado probably isn't a great team.
Yeah.
So save chances may be limited. Would be really the only concern I have with Bard.
Gotcha. Let's go to the last team here, and I didn't do this on purpose, but it feels like the D-backs might be the most obvious answer of where one of those guys signs that we've talked about, or a potential trade of like Liam Hendricks. This is the team that needs to make a move to shore up the back end of a bullpen if they really care, which that's a big if at times, because you know Melanson, we saw that show last year. Kennedy's gone. Ginkle, Mantiply, we all thought would be the guy. He didn't do it. it's a rough bullpen, Ryan. So how are we assessing the D-backs right now? Because I'm just I'm expecting someone else to show up and take the job.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, it's just tough to get like behind Melanson. He's just, you know, bottom third percentile K rate, declining velocity, his worst ratio since 2017. Like, and he lost the job last year. Now I could still see him getting 10 saves as the roster is currently constructed, but I don't know. He's pretty cheap in drafts. Like that's, I will say that. So I'm not like opposed to taking a shot on Melanson late in DC or a 50. But I think chances are pretty good that they do add one of those free agent closers that are available right now. Kevin Ginkle could be an alternative. I kind of have him as like the next in line guy right now. Behind Melanson, there's really kind of a committee between Melanson, Ginkle, Joe Mantiply. Joe Mantiply is the best reliever in the pen. He was an all-star last year, great walk rate. But, you know, they had an opportunity to use him as a closer last year and they didn't. So I think they kind of just want him to be their top lefty out of the pen in those scenarios and then rely on the other guys. But yeah, it's kind of a full fade for me, and unless one of those free agents signs there.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. I don't even want to play the game with this team. I'll pick from the other 29, go from there, narrow it down some more. But I do feel like one of those main names we keep talking about is going to
Arizona. Yeah, and they just signed Scott McGuff from Japan, who was a closer there. He had some success. Not really great baseball reference page. Nothing super impressive stands out for McGuff, but, you know, he was a closer in Japan. We've seen Robert Suarez come over, be successful in the big leagues after, you know, a couple good seasons in Japan. So it could be an option for them. You know, we'll see how he pitches in spring. But, yeah, I'm kind of haunted by this last year. I think early in draft season last year, what was his name? Oh, Wendelken. JB Wendelken was, like, in Arizona, picked up by Arizona, like, yeah, that just, I picked him up in like the 30 something round and never used him once. So it was just a wasted pick at that point. So
yep,
I think the risk of having that happen is pretty high with this current bullpen.
I 100% agree that that's very, very high in this situation. Yeah. Last question I have for you here, and we've talked about it, and I took notes like I always do when I have you and others on the show. So maybe the listeners did too, but I'm going to ask it anyways. And you have to give away all your secrets because I know you do a lot of DCs and 50s. What are your favorite late round targets?
I'm going to give away all my guys right now. So here they are. Alex Lang from Detroit, Diego Castillo, Daniel Hudson, I really like, Vesia from the Dodgers, Jose Alvarado, Robert Suarez, Reynaldo Lopez, Cody Hoyer.
Look at that, folks.
Those are all the guys I really, really want right now.
Open book. That's open book. I love it. And it makes me feel better because I do like a couple drafts before I really dig into podcasts and researching articles and stuff. And at least half those guys have been targets of mine late, which makes me feel a little better about my mental process of getting things going, seeing that you're on them. So I'll add the other
names. We talk to each other every year,
Bob. That's true.
We do this every year.
Yeah, we do the same show every year. Plus, we talk about things throughout the season. So, yes, yeah. I kind of have an idea of what's going on. But that's why I tell people the beautiful thing about doing this show is people say they love listening to it. But I love doing it because I'm learning as I do it. So it's a great yin and yang situation. Yeah, but awesome, 30 teams and some playful banter beforehand, all in the books. Another wonderful time with Mr. Ryan Roof. Plug away your good stuff before we head on out and you get to enjoy your holidays with the family.
Yeah. First of all, to the listeners, thank you for listening, tuning in. I really appreciate it. I've been making the podcast rounds more often this off season. So you're probably sick of hearing my voice by now, but really appreciate all the listeners who tune in. Please continue supporting this podcast. Bench with Bubba is 527 episodes deep. Like, that's a lot of episodes of fantasy baseball content. So keep supporting Bubba and all his great guests that he has on. So appreciate you having me. Have a safe, happy holiday year, new year. Hope to see you all in a draft room real soon. And you can find my work at RotoWire. Find me on Twitter at Ryan Roof, R-U-F-E. Always engage with people on there. And pretty close to 1,500 followers. I don't really care about those numbers, but I just noticed that and I was like,
still cool. Yeah. Thanks for the kind words. I'll say that much. Not needed, but thank you. What I wanted to say was I joked about it and then you tweeted about it too, that I think I joked about it on the show with Fish the other night or something. I said, I have Ryan Roof coming on. He's been on a lot of podcasts lately. That's a kudos to you. I'm glad people are having you on more. DiPietro is always good about that. I know you've been on with James and stuff, but when I started having you on a couple of years ago, you're kind of still new to the game of podcasting world, and it's good to get you out there because you're very knowledgeable, not just in closing. So people need to realize that he's a very good fantasy baseball player. So go check that out. And then the work at RotoWire is second to none. So
yeah, I tried to change it up this time a little bit because, you know, I did talk about the 30 bullpens with James and a lot of the guys, but now that I've done 130 reliever outlooks for the site, I'm much deep into it and there's new things to share. So hopefully this wasn't super repetitive for you guys. For those that have listened to me in recent months.
I learned a lot. And the one thing you mentioned about doing those player capsules, basically, or profiles, it's funny because I get catchers every year for one thing. I've done other stuff. It really does help. There's parts of me that goes, I wish I did this for every position because I'd crush my drafts, but there's no time in the world for that. But it does just open up so many things to the
every
the
player, athletes. Right?
It literally, I did 56 catchers. That is ridiculous. So when you say 130 relievers, I get it. let's have a fun holiday season. Make sure you check out Ryan on Twitter at Ryan Roof. I'm at BDNchick Ryan. Thanks for joining me. We will do this again, I think, at least one more time this off season. We'll have some fun.
Sounds good.
But anyway, this was Bench with Bubba, episode 527. Have a happy holidays. Catch you guys next time.
Way to win up to 25 times your money this football season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of statistics, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and an enormous selection of players and stat options are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million football fans who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/get100. And use code GET100. That's code GET100 at prizepicks.com/get100 for a first deposit match up to $100. PrizePicks, daily fantasy sports made easy.